Hi, this is Eric Poole. I'm Director of Marketing for Brand G Vacations, and this is the Be Brand G podcast, where we'll give you tips and all the scoop on gay travel and on Brand G Vacations. And today, my guest is Brand G's delightful cruise director and head of our UK office, direct from Dumfries, Scotland, Jonathan Gallagher. Yay! Woo! The crowd goes wild.
Eric, hi. How lovely to hear your voice.
Take a bow, Jonathan. Oh, wait, no one can see that. So, Mr. Gallagher, apart from late night hosting in your cabin, what are the duties of a cruise director?
Well, I wish I was late night hosting in my cabin. For anyone listening, I am single and there's nothing in my contract to say that I can't late night host. So thank you for bringing that up, Eric.
I do what I can.
A lot of people ask me, a lot of my friends say to me, oh my God, you just have such an amazing job. It's so lovely. You just go off in luxury travels around the world. And I say, I know I am the luckiest person alive, but it is, as you know, coming on a trip and kind of helping to work some trips, it's a lot of hard work. So it's great fun. It's amazing, but it's hard work. So that work kind of starts before. So there's lots of planning, possibly up to 2 years in advance. We plan for trips. That could be just selecting. You know, Brian and Jeff will look and we'll have meetings and they'll decide, you know, what trips we want to do, what have the guests said that they're interested in. And then once all the contracts are signed, then I'll come in and look at the onboard experience. So that could be, have we been on that ship before? What does that ship deliver? Looking at the lounges they may offer. I'll look at what entertainment would work on that ship. Who's available? Who do we want to bring on board? What kind of guests are going to be on that trip? Is it an older demographic, a younger demographic? All those kind of things. So then I look at that or try and get the entertainers contracted. So we make sure we've got some great people on board. What I'll also do is look at the excursions we're offering to make sure that they're all suitable, that they're all going to work for our guests. If some of them are more difficult to operate, you know, to go on than others, we just make sure the guests are aware of that. And all that comes onto what I call the master schedule. So I put all that information together, you know, from what time we wake up to what time we have breakfast, what time we have lunch, what time the bus goes here, how many buses, how many guides, everything. So that goes into a daily schedule. And it's kind of a like the trip Bible. Whether a guest has a birthday would be in there. So lots and lots of information. Once on board, I try definitely to make it look as if everything's stress-free, because it kind of is. We've done so much planning. It's kind of nice when you're on board. So then I get to do the glamorous bits that people see. I get to do announcements. You know me, Eric. They can't grab that microphone out of my hand, can they? I get to host the shows. A lot of it is just hosting in the lounges. Guests want to stay up late. They want to talk. They want to have a laugh. I'm usually one of the first up for morning tea and joining the guests for breakfast. And it could be problems, you know, things go wrong. It does happen in every trip, really, that someone's luggage hasn't arrived. And we can spend quite a lot of time looking at logistics of how to get that luggage to arrive at the ship.
Oh, yeah.
And our guests are so kind, though. I mean, people will rally around. We kind of make it known. And people will, you know, borrow items of clothing and everything.
Oh, thank God so many of our guests have extra glitter thongs and stuff.
It's just no one ever wants to borrow my clothes. But, you know, there's not many people at 5'2", is
right. Hey, let's back up for a second because I want to ask you about the entertainers a bit more. I think, you know, everyone's interested in the entertainers that appear on our Europe cruises and such. So how do you decide who those people are going to be and who's going to be on what trip?
Well, lots and lots, not just me that decides. So there's, you know, everyone will have a little input into it. And it's anything like you've suggested entertainers to us, Eric. You know, people that guests write into us and say, I've seen this person, they're really amazing. Other entertainers will say to us, have you checked out this act? They're really amazing, would be a great fit for your cruise. You know, it's a small ship. And you know, I think some people are used to going on the large ships where they see, you know, headline stars and everything, and that just doesn't fit for a small product. So we need the best caliber, the best quality of entertainment that works in a very small space and for a much smaller crowd. We try and mix it up a bit. So we have Misconception on board and a few trips because she's just absolutely hysterical and does the most amazing drag show. But if it was drag every night, I'm sure people would tell us that that's not exactly what they want. They want a mix of everything. So we try and balance it out. So if we've got, you know, Misconception, Kevin on, we would then have a singer on to complement. If we have Brandon and James have been on the trips and they're kind of that beautiful mix of classical, fusion, that rock, you know, we wouldn't put them on with another classical act. We try and mix them on with someone who was different, maybe a female vocalist. So that's it. So, and we've got people we work with for ages. We've had Amy and Freddie on board numerous occasions. And you've got lovely Alison Jaya comes on, Kim Kuzma. And then, you know, we like to look around and someone tells about someone new. So this year in the Seine River, we've got Christina Bianco coming on for the first time. So she is a brand new virgin. And that'll be amazing. She'll bring something different. And then we just wait. The guests, you know, the guests are quick to tell us what they like and what they don't like. And that's basically the guests decide who comes on board. Now, have you ever considered performing, Eric?
I have, and I have yet to receive that contract in the mail. I mean, I do appear as supermodel Erica Von Snatch occasionally during deck parties, but, you know, I like to leave them wanting more.
My sentiments exactly.
Okay, so you've been doing this for a while. So how does one get into something like this? I mean, how did this all begin for you?
It was probably with some friends. I used to work for British Airways. And a few of the crew, we got together and did an RSVP cruise. I think that was maybe 1990 or 91. And then we did bits of drag on that, but purely as passengers. And we just had an absolute hoot. And people got to know us. I suppose we became infamous. And I used to do a skit with Andy, and we were Maisie and Dolly, the stewardesses, and we entered one of the competitions, and people just loved us. And so they would say, you know, we couldn't always afford to cruise. So the guys at RSVP would say, you know, can you give up your time and come on? We were like, well, let's think about it. Of course we can. We'll be there. So they would move heaven and earth to try and get us on those cruises. And over the years, we just met so many people doing it, and it, you know, it became like a family. And of course, from that family has came Brian and Jeff. Who then formed Brand G Vacations.
Where exactly did you meet him?
And I suppose, do you know what? I've led a very wonderful life. I know I'm not anywhere near as old as you, Eric, but I've lived a lot harder than you. I met them on an RSVP cruise. It must have been, but which one? I don't know. I don't know. I'm probably on my 50th cruise, whether having fun or working. But yeah, we met them on Brand G, and I've met them through other adventures and different bits and bobs. And we all kind of had fun and clicked. So back in, I think it was 24, oh my God, my memory is terrible. Maybe, was it 2014, 2015? They asked me to go and help them host one of their riverboats in Europe. Mm-hmm. So I went along and did that. And, they were just expanding at a nice pace then. And then, you know, they started discussing having me on, you know, more often. And eventually it's just led to I couldn't do a full-time job and go off and do the cruises. So they found a lovely position for me, one that I can legally talk about.
Would that position be top or bottom?
Okay, I'm saying nothing. When one's single, you just have to be open to all options.
Amen to that. Now, let's talk about your past, that deep, dark past. You were in travel before you met Jeff and Brian,
yes,
right?
Yes, for those Brits who are listening, I did a degree, a Bachelor of Arts, and then I worked in airports. So I did airport management. And then I was always desperate. You know, I think as a young gay man, I was desperate to fly. And I used to look at the aircraft coming into the airports and think, oh, I want to do that. So I started, you know, applying to various airlines. I get into an airline called Dan Air that doesn't exist anymore. And just, I did we call it a summer season there. It's very much charter flights. And oh my God. Oh, just, it was amazing. It just, the excitement, you know, the uniform was probably...
Okay, where were the charter flights to?
We did all over Europe, the kind of the short Europe. So we did Tenerife and Lanzarote and, you know, places it's lots of destinations in Spain and in the winter, going towards the winter, we did some ski kind of charters. Wow. But it was, to me, it was just, as a wee boy from Scotland, it was just the most exciting thing. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't glamorous. It wasn't like first class or anything. I remember being on a 111, a BOAC 111. And you could tell what time it was because the sunlight was coming through the door.
Oh,
I mean, these aircraft didn't even have dropped down oxygen. So it was the golden day. It was the golden days, I like to think. Even though it was only 1989, 1990, it was still, so those aircraft, were, I'm sure they were around in the 60s.
Good God.
On some of the trips we did, the meal, I know, but listen, Eric, this will make you scream. Some of the meals were preloaded. So in the back of the seat rest, so the seat rest in front of you, there was a space and you could lift it up. So we call them tiffin boxes. It was basically the meal box, and there was two of them in there, one for the outbound trip and one for the way back. So the passenger would have to go in to the headrest in front, take out their tiffin pack, and it had maybe a tiny little roll, a little plastic cup for your tea or coffee, and a wee biscuit and your wee milk. Remember that horrible milk creamer you used to get? And the little plastic spoon. And so, of course, you'd do the service. You'd run around with your tray, tea, coffee, me, hello, are you for coffee? All this kind of thing. And so you'd do that. You'd have a wee break, and then you'd get the passengers on, you know, to come back to England. And they'd open up their box and go, there was nothing in it. And the passengers had eaten both boxes.
Oh,
they just thought,
geez.
Oh, I prefer what's in their
People
box.
Are really like cattle, aren't they?
Honestly, they were just so bad. But no, it was good days. And when you're young, I think, you know, I think we earned pennies at the time, and we lived off we used to call them the crew boxes. They used to put on food for us, and we lived off that. We had to, because the money was so awful. But I tell you, it's the most fun I've ever had. It was hysterical and new and exciting. I have to say, when I moved to British Airways, things moved up in the world. You know, when it was just British Airways was, you know, holds some very fond memories for me, and it was a wonderful, amazing airline. And of course, it enabled me to go around the world.
Well, and I would imagine that first class training really kind of helped you with Brand G, because, you know, that high level of service.
Yeah, and I think no matter where you work in an aircraft, a lot of it's problem solving. And when you're at 35, 40,000 feet and you haven't got something that someone's asking for, you know, you have to be pretty creative and pretty good at customer service in order to make that guest happy. And I think once you can do that, then working in Brand G is very similar. You know, we have a lot at our disposal on the ships, and the staff are wonderful. You know, for those who have traveled with us, everyone knows those guys and girls on those ships go the extra mile constantly. They are phenomenal in doing their jobs. So, you know, and that's all I'm there to help do, is to facilitate it for the guests. If the guest says to me, you know, I would have preferred that for my dinner last night, I'll try and make it happen. That's what we're there to do.
Right.
So in a way, to me, it's not difficult. It's not difficult. And I think the difference between Brand G and other companies is that, you know, we actually are with the guests. It's not like we put the guests in the dining room and they all go off and have the dinner and it's like that's them having their experience. You know, every single one of us that's involved in Brand G sit at a different table. We want to sit beside our guests. We want to know our guests. It's more like a family. So it's not like, okay, the guests are eating, let's run off and do something and just spend time on our own. We are there 24/7 with the guests. And I think they notice that and they really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So that's the experience to me.
So you've been doing this a while, right?
You keep saying a while. I'm not that old.
Well, you said BOAC, and you know the only reason I know that term is from The Crown.
Oh my God. I am not as old as the Queen. I'm just putting it out there. You know, I worked in airports where I've had a phone call and they've said, you've got 3 747s landing. They've been diverted. They'll be with you within 40 minutes. Can you find hotels to put all the guests in? And it's like, okay. And you know, that's when you have to find 700 hotel, 800 hotel bedrooms.
That is a level of stress I don't even want to contemplate.
I know, but you know, once you've done it once, you kind of think, take a deep breath, you know, tighten your bra straps and delve in there and make it work.
Absolutely. You know, I can't count the number of trips that I've been on for Brand G where, you know, sometime at the end of the trip, the crowd didn't give the Brand G crew a standing ovation, you know, for all the ways in which they kind of bent over backwards to make people happy. And I think that's sort of what makes the brand, you know, it's kind of an amazing group of people, you know?
No. Honestly, thank you. The praise, we like the praise. I've heard the clap many times.
Oh, for
sure. And you know, I've bent over backwards more times than you'd care to remember.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have pictures. All right. So for people are probably kind of realizing this now if they didn't already know you, but you're a little bit wackadoodle. So how does this happen? How you know, were you always like this, or how do you become someone like you?
Oh, my God. I think, first, thank you for thinking I'm funny. Don't know. It's just my personality. I'm quite a miserable sod when I'm on my own, and I can be quite deep and miserable. So maybe it's, and I live in my own. So when I get the chance to speak to someone else, I just get overly excited. And you know this for a fact, Eric, because I've been in meetings with you, and it's, you'll have to say, okay, Jonathan, thank you. Because I talk to two dogs here in Scotland, and when I do see my family and things, but it's a very rural life here. So when I do get the chance to speak to people, it's hard to get me to stop talking.
As is perhaps evidenced by this podcast. All right, so let's pretend we're on a trip. What would you say is the weirdest thing that's ever happened, either on a Brand G trip or, you know, on another cruise line?
I'm trying to be really careful because, you know, you don't know who's listening to this podcast, do you? And I'm scared in case the person might recognize the situation. I mean, we have put people to bed.
Right.
We've had overzealous people who maybe want to join in with the entertainers on stage and think they're part of the show.
Is that overzealous or overdrunk?
Well, as you say, no one's overdrunk. They're just overpoured. But no, nothing, nothing. Considering the amount of people that I've taken on trips and that Brand G has taken on trips, nothing really bad has happened. I think I've seen more things on the big ships where things go wrong. You know, and it can go wrong on the big ships. It went wrong for me once. I was dancing and having a wild time dancing. I blame Robbie Leslie for this, for playing such good music.
Oh, the DJ.
And he'll probably do it again on the Clipper ship and the Panama Canal at the end of the year. But he was playing, oh, God, he was playing some most amazing music. And it was just, you know, an afternoon tea dance. Who doesn't love a tea dance? And I was just giving it all the moves, thinking I was amazing. And then there was just this bang. And I thought, what's that noise? Then realized it was my knee as I fell to the ground. And my knee gave up. And that was it. I was in a wheelchair.
You poor baby.
Actually, wanted a couple of days left.
That's kind of a mood killer, isn't it?
Oh, and that was some tea.
And I'm guessing that was some tea you were drinking as well. Am I right?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. But the I've organized a wedding service on board. That was interesting. I do believe they're not together anymore, and I don't think it was anything to do with me.
Let's go with that.
I'm not actually sure they remember getting married. I'm going to put that out there. I don't think they remember. There was a lot of alcohol involved in that wedding celebration.
So shotgun wedding with alcohol.
Yes, it was different. I did another
one. So would that be the sweetest moment you've had on board, do you think?
The sweetest moment? Meeting you, Eric?
Oh, that's a low bar.
Do you know the sweetest moments for me is probably those moments, like I remember on the Christmas market where I'm in a very privileged place where I get to give the toast and, you know, I get to raise that glass and say to everyone and wish each other a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and, you know, and just to say, to get everybody to stop and look at each other in the room and just appreciate each other. And I think that's just amazing. Yeah. And I cry. I find every single time I think I won't cry this time. And I do. I stand there, my voice breaks.
Your mascara runs.
Because it is an emotional experience.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything is sweet. You know, just sitting beside someone on a bus on a tour and having a good old chin wag is absolutely amazing. Yeah. And when I see some of our couples, you know, we celebrate people's anniversaries, you know, and we've got couples on board who've been together for 50 years and things. And I think, oh, my goodness, that's sweet.
It is.
That is just so beautiful. So just seeing people enjoy themselves and having a great time.
I completely agree. You know, I'm always amazed how at the end of trips, everybody gets so emotional, you know, and not just because the trip's ending, you know, of course they don't want it to end, but because they've made like these amazing new friends and stuff, and it becomes like this big love-in. And I think that's so sweet.
Mm. Although I have to say, Eric, and you've probably seen it, sometimes at the end of trips, I'm amazed some couples are together when there's been maybe too much loving from one and not the other.
Yeah, that does happen. You know, although I do think that that is a function of the big ocean ships a lot more than the riverboats. We were on a Mediterranean cruise years ago, and this couple, they'd had a huge fight, and the one half of the couple thought the other one had thrown himself off of the top deck, and he reported it, and so they had to circle and look for the guy in the water. It turns out the guy had just gone up to the top deck, taken a bottle of vodka, and passed out. We were all so mad because we missed our port the next day, and we were like, they should just line those two up and let us bitch slap them on the way out. So I have been to Scotland, but I have never actually been to the beautiful home of Jonathan Gallagher. You live in Dumfries, Scotland, which stupid Americans like me have no idea where that is. So help us place it. Where is it in relationship to Edinburgh or to Glasgow?
Well, it is in the south of Scotland. It's the closest town to England, in fact, the large town. So there's Dumfries and then there's Gretna. People have heard of Gretna Green because that's where historically people run off. In the old days, you used to run from England up to Gretna Green in Scotland to get married, because you could get married at 16 in Gretna Green without your family's permission, whereas you couldn't in England. So Gretna Green's at the very next town. It's virtually, as you drive through Gretna Green, you're driving into England. And Dumfries is 25 minutes from Gretna Green. And, you know, it's a fairly big town, but 35,000 population. And I live just in the outskirts of that town. But, you know, we're the second biggest region in Scotland. So it's kind of rural. So that, you know, to drive to the next biggest town is Stranraer. And it's like, I think it's about an hour and probably takes about an hour and 40 minutes or something to drive there. So, and I know in American terms, that's probably nothing because America is so vast, isn't it? But yeah, you know, it's kind of a rural area, but it's beautiful. We've got the water. We're near the west coast, which is, to me, it's the most beautiful coast. The east coast of Scotland and Britain, in fact, is, I'd say, the kind of sandy coast, beautiful beaches. And on the west coast of Britain, it's more rugged from the Atlantic swells coming in. So lots of rocks, but still beautiful beaches and everything, and lots of amazing wildlife. And it takes about 2 hours to go to Glasgow and 2 hours to go to Edinburgh.
So I have to ask you, will you stay in Scotland your whole life, or do you have like big dreams of coming to America?
Oh, that reminds me of that Neil Diamond song, "We're Coming to America."
And scene. Thanks. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. I have lived in Spain. So I lived in Spain had a place in Spain in Sitges for 8 or 9 years. So was there most of the time. Even though I've always kind of been resident in Britain. I've lived in London for quite a long time. But would I see myself in America? It depends if the right man came along. I don't know. But seriously, at the minute, I have dogs and they wouldn't make it to America, so I wouldn't leave my dogs.
Right.
So I'm here with my gorgeous Doug and Dolly.
Doug and Dolly. We love Doug and Dolly. All right, so let's talk about the fact that, dear listeners, our beloved, adorable, sweet, charming Jonathan is single. So inquiring minds want to know, what do you look for in a man?
Well, before I say that, Jeff, our lovely co-worker who owns Brandy with Brian, says to me, if you're over 50 and still single, it's for a reason. And I'm like, thank you, but I am not giving up hope just yet.
Hell no.
I like to think that is such a Jeff comment, isn't it? So for all of us out there who are over 50, like me, and single, it's just because circumstance. So what do I look for in a man? Let's bring it down to basics here, Eric. I think breathing's a good start.
Right.
So
always a plus.
You know, not quite. Yeah, always a plus. I don't know. I think I don't have a type. It's not like, you know, I suppose historically I've always preferred darker toned people, probably because I was always kind of blondie. But, you know, I like people that are taller than me. So that's really easy. Most people are. So I said, I don't really know if I have a type. And I think it's people. You meet people and you suddenly you're talking to them and think, oh, my God, yes, I can look at, you know, you open a magazine and think, oh, he's gorgeous. You know, someone's really stunning looking. But I think in real life, it's just that something passes between two people. And it's a look, or maybe they make me laugh. And I think that's it. You know, it's I'd like someone who'd want to share the travel experiences. So someone's got to love travel. Someone who'd love dogs. And, you know, I love my music and my theatre. So somebody who wants to go to concerts and go to shows and that kind of thing. Right. So just people who are kind of like-minded. I could say something rude here, but I can't. Because you're always, you know, on these dating websites.
Why stop now?
No. Well, on these dating websites, people say, I want someone a bit like me. And you think, well, go fuck yourself.
Oh, God.
I can't say that because it's a live podcast.
You just did.
Did you end up, and you don't have to disclose here, but I mean, you are in a beautiful relationship of quite a few years with the amazing Sandy. Now, was it love at first sight?
It really kind of was. I met him one night at a happy hour at this restaurant that a friend of mine and I used to go to. And when I met him that night, I wasn't entirely sure that he was interested. And so the next day I said to another friend of mine, this guy's great. Somebody should marry him. And then I did.
Oh, and he is so sweet. Sanford and Erica. What a lovely combination.
Oh, God. Speaking of alter egos, is your alter ego Maisie still single? And if so, why?
I think Maisie will always be single. She's not the kind of marrying type. So I think no one could control.
Why is that? Is she just, you know, afraid of commitment? Or
I don't think she even understands what commitment is. She's just so mad and so desperately out there partying. Like, she doesn't have time, so I don't even think she's that sexual, darling.
She is slightly deluded, but she's terribly glamorous.
Well, if you call 15 layers of lipstick glamorous, then you stick with that. So, no, she's a kind-hearted gal, really. But I'm not sure she's the marrying type.
She does play a mean recorder.
Oh, my goodness. That talent has no bounds. I'm surprised that Juilliard hasn't phoned her yet. Just to say, you know, could she go and do a masterclass, maybe?
Oh, that's so sweet that you think that.
She does, not me.
All right, I think that should probably wrap up this beautiful podcast on that note. So for those of you who are out there who are single, please give Jonathan a ring. Otherwise, we hope that you will join us on a Brand G trip sometime soon, and hopefully you'll get to meet this lovely man and get to know him in ways big and small, appropriate and inappropriate. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we will see you next time on the Be Brand G podcast.
Bye. Thank you.